supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is Newsworks Tonight. 8 months after a deadly riot in a Delaware prison, 18 inmates now face new charges, including murder. WHYY's Shirley Min reports.
Of the 18 inmates charged, 16 are accused of first-degree murder in connection with February's riot at James T. Vaughn Correctional Center in Smyrna. The uprising killed Correctional Officer Lieutenant Stephen Floyd. Two other officers were injured, and a counselor was taken hostage. The attorneys representing Floyd's widow and the guards declined to comment for now. And while measured, Delaware Correctional Officers Union President Jeff Klopp says he's pleased with the indictments.
It's not an outcome yet. It's a step in the right direction, and we're moving forward, and we wait to see what happens through the judicial process. We haven't gotten a result yet, so we can't say it's a satisfactory outcome.
Because the investigation is ongoing, court rules restrict Attorney General Matt Dehn from publicly discussing the charges. However, a statement from his office reads, "This was an extremely important and time-consuming investigation that involved unique challenges. I appreciate the police and prosecutors' focus on ensuring that justice is done for the victims in this case and their families." The defendants were already serving time for previous convictions. The new indictments also include recklessly causing the death of a correctional officer, kidnapping, assault, riot, and conspiracy. An independent review of the nearly 20-hour siege documented systemic dysfunction within Delaware's prisons, which it said created, quote, fertile ground for chaos and violence. Reverend Chris Bullock, head of the Delaware Coalition for Prison Reform and Justice, says criminal prosecution is important, but not enough.
I'm hopeful that the symptoms will be studied, the root causes will be looked at seriously, so we can avoid this kind of unfortunate incident happening again in our Delaware prisons. My position is we want fair and equal treatment for both the inmates and for the officers.
Governor John Carney has implemented some of the recommendations from the independent review, such as increasing correctional officers' starting salaries and addressing the staffing shortages. From the Delaware desk, Shirley Min, WHYY News.
Like nearly every other city in North America, Philadelphia is putting the final touches on its bid to convince Amazon to build its second headquarters here ahead of Thursday's deadline. The tech giant is making big promises to the winner, a $5 billion investment, and 50,000 high-paying jobs. So, does Philly have a shot? Well, this week we're diving into the costs and benefits of doing business in our region. First up, Amazon says it wants a business-friendly city with low taxes and big incentives. Jim Saxa of WHYY's Plan Philly asks, can the city deliver?
This is the sound of the Redevelopment Assistance Capital Program. Okay, that's actually the sound of a construction worker sawing through some pipes. But those state grants paid for that cutting you hear. You see, I'm at the soon-to-be new headquarters for Aramark. When the company considered leaving Philly last year, the city and state offered Aramark more than $20 million in direct subsidies and infrastructure improvements to keep it here. Aramark is playing the game that all big companies play, the economic development sweepstakes. Comcast played it to get $40 million for its first Center City tower, and then played it again to get another $40 million for its new one currently under construction. But those guys are mere amateurs compared to Amazon. Even before its big HQ2 competition, Amazon perfected this game. According to an analysis by the Business Journals, Amazon has gotten $1.2 billion in state and local subsidies for its warehouses across the U.S. The team putting together Philadelphia's bid for HQ2 has been tight-lipped about what it'll offer. In fact, the company is requiring cities to keep that information confidential. But it's touched off a debate about whether these kinds of goodies are worth giving out.
From my point of view, I'm not a big fan of offering subsidies to firms that come in and start negotiating with the city.
That's Robert Inman, a professor of finance and public policy at Wharton.
Because in most instances, it's a zero-sum game. You'll end up lowering benefits or raising taxes elsewhere in the city to subsidize the relocator with probably little in the way of impact on jobs.
More often than not, Inman says, the winning city ends up losing, spending more on subsidies than it gets in new jobs and tax revenue. And giving huge companies big tax breaks just feels unfair, says Kevin Gillen, an economist at Drexel.
It'd be difficult to look the owner of, I think, a North Philadelphia bodega in the eye and say, you know what, you've got to pay a sales tax and a property tax and gross receipts tax and a wage tax, but we're going to let all these $100,000 employees of Amazon, you know, get a break on that.
And when cities join these bidding wars for companies, Gillen says it encourages even more bad behavior. Other firms see Amazon or Comcast being rewarded with tax breaks and go, why not me? That's a question many people in Philly's tech startup scene are asking right now. Melissa Shipke is the CEO of Tassel, an analytics company. Like most of her peers, she's excited by the prospect of Amazon coming to town.
As somebody who got engaged using Amazon, and I do all of my personal shopping on Amazon, you know, love the company and would love to have them here.
Yeah, you heard that right. Shipke's boyfriend, Nick, proposed to her using Amazon Echo.
Nick is kneeling next to you. Do you take the ring? Will you marry Nick? You can say yes or no.
Shipke said yes without hesitation. But the idea of wooing Amazon with a big dowry, that gives her jitters.
One would hope that some of those tax incentives are kind of shared across the board to some of the young rising startups here as well, especially now that we'll be competing for talent, some bigger competitors in the area.
Gillen says Philly would be better off reducing business taxes for everyone instead of just a few big companies. Offering enormous financial incentives makes sense as long as they're just a deal sweetener, not the main course.
If Amazon is serious about relocating here, I want them to relocate here because our underlying fundamentals are good, our labor force, our cost of living, our amenities, you know, things like that.
If Amazon's decision does come down to whoever offers the most cash, Philly won't win. Across the Delaware River, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie has promised to cover all of Amazon's construction costs to the tune of $7 billion. Philly simply doesn't have that kind of money. And Pennsylvania? Well, Pennsylvania's broke. Harrisburg was supposed to pass a budget in July. It's October now, and there's still no deal in sight. And that's another bigger problem for Philly's business prospects. Like most companies, Amazon says it wants a, quote, stable business environment.
I mean, you could say gridlock is a form of stability.
That's Josh Seven, acting executive director of the Economy League of Greater Philadelphia. He's only half kidding. Seven says regardless of whether Amazon chooses to come here, Harrisburg's dysfunction is no laughing matter for the region's economy.
Businesses can handle a certain level of cost and regulation, but more than anything, they're hungry for predictability and consistency. And there's a certain very basic level of government functioning, like being able to pass a budget. I get concerned about what kind of signal that sends.
Chronically unbalanced budgets today have a habit of becoming tomorrow's severe service cuts or painful tax hikes. Republicans in Harrisburg recently floated a proposal to tax commercial storage. Amazon, with 15 warehouses across the state, would have been hit pretty hard. That plan died, but Amazon site selectors undoubtedly took notice. So Pennsylvania won't win any good government awards, and Philly can't shower Amazon in cash. But the city has plenty more going for it. Great colleges, a good transportation network, and a relatively low cost of living for a major city. That has Philadelphia's business leaders feeling pretty confident. And if Amazon does end up picking Philly, those leaders will probably say the same thing Melissa Shipke's Echo said after she accepted Nick's proposal.
Damn right. Congratulations.
Jim Saxa, WHYY News.
Alumni of the venerable Dobbins Technical High School in North Philadelphia are furious over a change to the school's admissions policy. For the first time, Dobbins will accept students through a lottery instead of a merit-based application process. The same will go for students at Philadelphia's three other vocational high schools. The change has opened up a debate over what is the fairest way to accept students and what's best for the schools. WHYY's Avi Wolfman-Arendt reports.
When Richard Yankowitz started as a teacher at Dobbins in 1969, the school was so full, students had to come in shifts.
some students started their day at, you know, 7 in the morning, and some didn't start until, you know, almost a quarter of 10.
And to even get on one of those shifts, you had to pass an entrance test. It was those high standards, Yankowitz says, that gave Dobbins a citywide reputation as a top school.
So why in the world are you going to try to take away what's good in the city and just make it another so-so school?
It's an easy answer, says Superintendent William Height. Equity. Height wants every kid who is interested in one of the vocational programs at Dobbins to have at least a chance of getting in.
If children are interested in pursuing cosmetology or building trades, I want the children into those programs.
All this drills down to a bigger issue about high schools in Philadelphia. There are all sorts of choices. Schools with high standards gobble up a lot of the motivated students. Schools that serve everyone end up with tougher-to-teach children. The Dobbins community is worried that it's going to end up in the latter camp.
You can't destroy what was once great, and that's what's going to happen.
So what should Philly do with its specialty schools? Should it open the door wide or keep the standards high? Avi Wolfman-Arendt, WHYY News.
When Buck, M.K. Asante's brutally honest memoir about growing up in North Philadelphia, published a few years ago, critics hailed Asante's voice as one for a generation, and now he's working on a film about the book, and there's a new push to teach Buck in Philadelphia's public schools. Asante, now a professor at Morgan State University, will be in town tomorrow to talk with teachers who want to include Buck in their curriculums. But teaching the book hasn't come without controversy. Asante recently sat down with WHYY's Annette John Hall.
This is the book that I needed when I was 16. This is the book that I long for. Literature and reading and art helped change my life. When I wrote Buck, I was thinking about all these kids that I knew, but I didn't know. You know, I didn't know them personally, but I knew them because I'd been to school with them. I was one of them.
Let me pull the lens in a little bit. You were born on the continent of Africa. You had two parents, Kariamu Welsh, who was a renowned dance scholar, is your mother. Malefi Asante, the father of Afrocentricity, is your father. Both scholars who really kind of exposed you to a world way outside of North Philly, but yet you did not like school. What did you want to do if not school?
That's such a great question. I think my parents' generation thought that, oh, if we had a good job, if we just, you know, get moved to a bigger house, maybe we would be able to shield our kids from what's going on. But that's not the case. What's going on engulfs everything. My mom teaches at Temple right now. The other day, she's driving home and her window shatters. She pulls over, the cops come over, and it's like, you know, they find a shell casing from a bullet. And they're like, oh, must have been somebody shooting in the area. And it accidentally hit my mom's window. So I just say all that to say, you know, my mom is, she's not involved in anything, and we can't escape.
There's been a renewed push to, you know, teacher book. Here in Philadelphia, and I've spoken to some teachers who have talked about the pushback from parents who don't necessarily want their kids to read the book, particularly the chapter about the strippers. You know, weigh in on the controversy a little bit.
The kids at Alney, in Kensington, at Gratz, at all over Philly, are you kidding me? My nephew just got shot 3 times. He has a bullet in his back right now. You think some a page about a strip club in a book is, come on, these kids are dealing with real life. And it's offensive when the adults get involved and say, oh, I don't want my child to read about it. Like, this is what we need, to have the right conversations with our children, not to act like it doesn't exist and then we get shocked when the crazy stuff happens.
Most people don't know this, but you are making a film based on the memoir. So tell us a little bit about how that's going.
So when I wrote Buck, I always knew that I wanted to take it to the screen. But I wanted to do it in a very specific way. I had a very specific vision about the kind of movie that Buck would be. Also, what it would be for Philadelphia. I mean, Buck is a Philadelphia story in so many ways, and Philadelphia is a character in Buck, you know what I mean? The city itself. And so the film will be shooting in Philadelphia, using a lot of young people in Philadelphia, a lot of old people, a lot of in-between people, all types of people. We're going to be shooting in Philadelphia in 2018 and looking to release the movie in 2019 probably.
MK Asante, thank you so much.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at whyy.org/news. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Heller, NewsWorks Tonight.